Good morning and welcome. Today we start a new theme, perseverance. And for some of you, it may have been an act of perseverance to come here this morning, especially with the continuing winter weather. You are welcome here. To you UFM members and to our visitors, you are welcome. There are announcements in your program. And visitors, if you would like to please sign the guest book in the narthex and join us for coffee after service. That would be wonderful. We would like for the people that were interested in the conveners training to meet around 12:15 after service, and we will decide if we're going forward today or rescheduling. And also in the ALSOP room, we have a letter writing station. If you would like to write a letter to the ICE agents who are detaining the man in Lawrence, Saeed Jamal, there's more information about it in the ALSOP room. So now we have Tom's going to read our chalice lighting reading, and Jake is going to light the chalice for us.
This is a poem written by Reverend Gretchen Haley for Elizabeth Warren, titled, "And Yet You Persist." Though you have been warned and given plenty of explanations, reasons to do otherwise, you have persisted to claim a life of joy and justice, to carve out this time, this space for the renewal of your own heart. Despite all the reasons, the resistance, fighting for your attention, luring you towards fear, you persist to practice gratitude for this day, this life that has been given, this chance to begin again. And so let us gather that we might offer one another courage, strength, healing, hope. In this promise to persist in kindness, persevere in compassion, and prevail in a life that is for more than ourselves, come, let us worship together.
And now we're going to sing number 350, "The Ceaseless Flow of Endless Time." Now the choir is going to sing "Follow the Golden Sun," and today we are blessed with the appearance, return of Slavomir Dobrensky to accompany the choir so that Renee is free to direct.
Of gravity to the ground.
Now it's the time for the story for all ages. So if I can have the kids and the young at heart, who would be like to join me? Good morning. This month, or starting today, the theme of the month is perseverance. So do you guys know what perseverance is? Jake?
Perseverance means never giving up and keep trying no matter what happens.
That's right, keep trying. So today's story for all ages is from Ethiopia. Do you know where Ethiopia is? How about the big kids? It's in Africa. So it's called The Lion's Whiskers. Bizenesh, a woman of the Ethiopian highlands, married Gudina, a man of the lowlands. Gudina's first wife had died of a fever, and he had an 8-year-old son whose name was Sagreb. When Bizenesh went to the house of Gudina, she quickly saw that Sagreb was a very sad boy because he missed his mother so much. In only a short time, Bizenesh grew to love Sagreb as if he were her own son, and she tried to be a good mother. She mended all of Sagreb's clothes and bought him new shoes. She asked him what foods he liked best, and she always saved the choicest pieces of meat for the wat for Sagreb. But Sagreb did not thank her. He would not even look at her or talk to her. Bizenesh and Sagreb were often alone together because Gudina was a merchant who traveled with mule caravans to distant places. Bizenesh worried that Sagreb would be lonely and tried especially hard to please him when his father was away. So here's a picture of them together. "I have always wanted a son," Bizenesh told Sagreb. "Now God has given me one. I love you very much." Often she tried to kiss him, but always Sagreb would turn away from her, and once he shouted, "You are not my mother. I do not love you." One day, Sagreb ran away from the house and hid in the town market until his father came and found him. When Sagreb returned home, Bizenesh tried to take him in her arms, but he pulled away from her. He would not touch the bowl of delicious soup she had saved for him. Bizenesh cried all night long. In the morning, Bizenesh went to the hut of a famous wise man. She told the wise man about her new stepson, who refused to love her, no matter how hard she tried to please him. Here's the wise man. "You must make me a magic love powder," Bizenesh told the old man. "I will put it in Sagab's food, and then he will love me." The wise man was silent for several minutes. "I can do what you ask," he said at last. "But to make such a powder, I must have 3 whiskers from the ferocious lion who lives in the Black Rock Desert across the river. Bring the whiskers to me, and I will make the powder for you." Bizenesh could hardly believe her ears. "How can I get the lion's whiskers?" she asked. "He will surely kill me." "I cannot tell you how to get the whiskers," the wise man said to Bizenesh. "That is for you to decide, but I must have them before I can make the love powder." Bizenesh walked sadly from the wise man's hut. She did not sleep a wink that night, but in the morning her mind was made up. Nothing was as important to her as winning Sagab's love. She had to try to get 3 whiskers from the lion, even if he ate her. Only then would the wise man make the magic love powder for her. That very day, Bizenesh carried a large piece of raw meat to the Black Rock Desert. At last she saw the lion standing on a large rock, watching her from a great distance. When the lion jumped from the rock and loped toward her, Bizenesh was terrified. She threw the meat on the ground and ran. Only when she reached the river did she stop and look back. She saw the lion standing over the meat she had dropped. She heard him roar before he began to eat. 2 days later, Bizenesh went again to the Black Rock Desert with a big piece of meat. She saw the lion watching her from the same rock. This time she walked closer to him before the lion jumped down and started toward her. Bizenesh stood still for a moment and watched the lion approach. Then her fear overcame her, and she threw the meat down and ran. When she looked back, she saw the lion eating. On the following day, Bizenesh walked even closer to the lion. This time, she placed the meat on the ground and walked slowly away. Before she had gone far, she stopped and watched as the lion came and ate the meat. Day after day, Bizenesh came closer. Finally, she left the meat only a few hundred feet from the lion.
The great beast growled, but Bizenesh did not think it sounded like an angry growl. She moved only a few steps away before she stopped and watched the lion eat. The next day, Bizenesh left the meat 50 feet from the lion and stayed while he came and ate. Then a few days later, Bizenesh walked right up to the lion and handed him the meat. Her heart pounded with fear, but her love for Sagab was so great that she did not run. She watched the lion's great jaws fly open, crash shut. She heard the sound of his teeth tearing through the meat. After a moment, she reached out with a very sharp knife and cut 3 whiskers from the lion's muzzle. The lion was so busy eating, he didn't even notice. Bizenesh ran all the way to the wise man's hut. She was out of breath, but she was still able to shout, "I have the lion's whiskers!" She waved them in front of the old man. "Now make me the love powder, and Sagab will surely love me." The wise man took the lion's whiskers. He looked at them and then handed them back to Bizenesh. "You do not need a love powder," he told her. "You learned how to approach the lion slowly. Do the same with Sagab, and he will learn to love you." The end. Go in love for heart. Now Renee will play the offertory for us, and we thank you for your gifts.
And during the offertory, if you have a written joy or concern, you'll give it to Dick, because he is going to collect them during the offertory. The cards are out in the narthex if you got one, or if you didn't get one, they're out there. We gather as community, and in community it's important that we make connections by sharing the deepest concerns and joys of our hearts. We are all today joyful for the beautiful snow and concerned about driving home. I want to mention that Michael Oldfather, our music director, is still under the weather with the flu, and we're concerned for him as his surgery has been postponed and hope that it gets resolved shortly. And Tom's cousin has learned she has a terminal condition with heart disease and probably may not live past 2018. She is having a celebration of life today, and Tom's going to see her in a few weeks. So our thoughts are with you, Tom, and our thoughts are with all who carry weights in their heart, and our rejoicing is with those who have something to celebrate. So glad we're here together in community, even if we are few this morning.
I was going to quickly explain the new thing on our... I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Morocco from 1995 to 97, and one of my best friends there, my Moroccan brother, Brahim, lives in a village called Merzouga in the Sahara Desert, and he makes his living selling fossils, among other things. And so this is a picture frame or a mirror frame just of a chunk of fossils that are just... everywhere in around his village. And so, you know, I thought fossils were a good symbol of perseverance. So that's, I was going to talk to you today, a personal reflection about persevering through my time as a Peace Corps volunteer. I was sent to a village called Tafraout, where I was the first volunteer there ever. So they were not familiar with the concept of Peace Corps or why an American woman would want to go and live by herself in the middle of nowhere in Morocco. Because it really was kind of in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't on the way somewhere else. You went there to go there. It was kind of a dead end. It was gorgeous, and the people were lovely. It was a transition, definitely a change for me and for them. And when... during our Peace Corps training, they especially worked with us female volunteers on dealing with sexual harassment that we most likely would experience during our time there. And Peace Corps basically said, ignore it. You just have to ignore it and walk away. That sounds like really good advice, but that did not work with my personality. And just kind of made things worse for me internally. And to the point where I was calling my parents frequently, waking them up at 4 a.m, crying, saying, I want to come home, I want to come home. But my mom helped me persevere. She was one of the, there were many people that helped me persevere. My mom helped me persevere. And now that I'm a parent, I'm sure it was really hard for her to do this, but to say, you know, aren't there things that you enjoy about your experience? And I'm like, yeah, I love the women I work with. And, you know, the majority of the people here are really nice. It's just the few men that, you know, make my life a living hell. And she's like, don't let them win. You know, stay there. You're going to regret if you quit. And so I stayed. And I learned that I needed to let people in. I had it. Really was going to take a village. It took a support system. So I let my friend Brahim know, and he and his male relatives ran a rug store in my town. And they were my brothers. They really treated me like their sister. And so once they found out, they physically took care of some of the men that were bothering me. And so they didn't bother me anymore. And then when my neighbor ladies found out what was happening to me and that I didn't want to go out shopping on the one day of a week where we actually had food in the village where I could go shop, because that's when the harassment was the worst, they banded together and said, you will shop with us. And so I would go shopping with the women, and no one would bother me when I was with them. And if they did, oh, I felt sorry for them, because those women would take them on. And then I had three families that basically adopted me as their daughter or sister. And so I persevered. I was there for 2.5 years. And I consider it the second best thing I've done in my life after having my son. So what I learned is that it takes a village sometimes to help you persevere.
Our hymn is number 1019, I think, Fire of Commitment. 1028, Fire of Commitment. Perseverant ones, eh? Yes. I've been noticing that a lot of people are worn out these days. Physically, yes, we're certainly seeing that with flu at epidemic levels and God knows what else floating through the air, and the pressure on families with working parents who struggle for enough time and energy to parent their children, keep them in school, and provide access to soccer or martial arts or music lessons. So physical exhaustion is real. More, though, I think people are spiritually exhausted. Every day, the news assaults us with division, with the latest scandal, the current disgrace, the most recent disaster, and that's the atmosphere in which The Daily Show's mock newscaster Trevor Noah proclaimed something like, "Who would have thought that the president paying off a porn star would be the fourth most significant story of the day?" Our outrage is systematically worn down by a barrage of headlines and tweets. I call it spiritual exhaustion because our ethical systems are being tested. We cannot do enough to advocate for our values. We wonder if love really is the answer when what we want to do is strike out with anger and even hatred. We feel frustrated and drained as our sense of outrage is tapped out. Our joy is being stolen. It's not our bodies alone that are tired, but our souls. We feel estranged from ourselves, from the values that uphold us, from the energies that enliven us. Or maybe that's just me. Anyone else relate? It's easy when we get like this to withdraw in one way or another. Maybe refuse to listen or look at the news or immerse ourselves in our family and try to keep our something that can regain joy. Or we dull our senses by binge-watching Stranger Things or The Crown, or drown the senses in drink or some other addictive behavior. We're worn out because we haven't figured out key strategies for perseverance. I'm not sure there could be anything that would be a more timely theme for us right now, perseverance. Eboo Patel, the Muslim interfaith leader whose book we're having a community discussion on Monday evening, spoke to a group of young people right after DACA was rescinded, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals immigration policy. And some of the folks he was talking with were dreamers who felt that the rug had been pulled out from under them, or perhaps the net removed from while they were swinging on high trapezes. Feelings were raw. He offered a strong message. Don't play for tomorrow. Play for the day after and the day after. And I'm basing some of my remarks this morning around things that Patel said, but embellishing his ideas. One of the secrets of perseverance, and I know it's a cliche, but it's true. We're not in a sprint, but in a marathon. We have to look beyond the immediate and engage in ways that are sustainable today, tomorrow, the day after, and the day after, and the day after that. Patel went on to remind his audience that we have to focus our eyes and our minds and to stay close to what we love. Focus on a vision. Keep your eyes on the prize. You may know that phrase from the classic civil rights documentary by that name, Eyes on the Prize. And the name comes from a gospel song. It's sometimes sung as Keep Your Eyes on the Prize, and it's sometimes keep your hands on, sung as Keep Your Hands on the Plow. Either way, the words continue, hold on, hold on, keep your eyes on the prize, hold on. Both that eyes on the prize and hand on the plow speak of maintaining focus, keeping in mind the vision, what we're working for, while steadying the plow. The vision and the work, the vision and the work, the vision and the work. If we're continually distracted by chaos, it's hard to stay focused on what we're going for, the prize. And at the same time, if the hands don't stay steady, no amount of dreaming that vision are ever going to matter. So one of the strategies that we have to focus our minds is through internal dialogue. Marissa was talking about how her mother helped her redirect her thoughts to what was positive about what she was doing. Redirecting ourselves from discouragement, reframing our efforts so that we can see our success rather than our shortcomings. Our feelings are grounded in our thoughts. They emanate from our thoughts. Remember the little engine that could? It could keep on because it kept saying, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. Hold on! The thought led to confidence and persistence, setting aside any feelings of insecurity or anxiety. So to be persistent, we have to keep the vision in mind and shape our thoughts towards success. And I don't mean to make that sound easy, because it's not. The power of positive thinking cannot overcome everything, and there are limits to the extent that we can create our own reality through dream boards and affirmations, and that's why it's easy to make fun of them. But that doesn't mean that powerful thinking, positive thinking, isn't powerful. It is. We have to remember that we're not lying to ourselves when we say those positive things. Well, we have to check to make sure we're not lying to ourselves. It's so easy to believe lies we tell ourselves, but the lies may be the things we're saying to discourage ourselves. The lies may be the things we're saying to let ourselves off the hook from persevering. So it may be, those may be the lies rather than the positive messages we're talking our minds into. Habits of thought are hard to resist and hard to change. And no matter how determined we are, no matter how hard we try, no matter what great affirmations we're giving ourselves, sometimes we fall into disarray. The circumstances may not fit what we want to see happen. The hurdles may be too many. The personal problems may be too profound. A poem by Charles Hughes called New Year's Geese. El Niño Winter, January. Geese fly high above this still suburban street, so high I hear their cries, then have to strain to see them. Not a V, dark flecks of ink bunched on a construction paper sky. They're indistinct, seemingly in distress, moving as bubbles move in boiling water and getting nowhere. Honking wildly, they appear to have encountered unawares some mortal and invisible enemy. I can't help but admire their stamina. Minutes go by. The geese keep grappling with whatever chaos holds them in its grip, and I'm thinking, who does better these days? When suddenly, silence falls. For no clear reason, the nonstop caterwauling stops. 1 second, and two, and three, eternity in brief. A single voice takes up its chant-like call. Others call back, and back and forth the geese soon antiphon themselves into formation, a fresh, clean V in which they vanish. Me? There can be mercy deep in memory. I've found unseen, piercing as parting sound. I love this image that Charles Hughes gives us of the geese. They're out in the sky, not in their normal V pattern, but as scattered specks, indistinct, in distress, honking wildly and getting nowhere. I can feel how these geese are doing. It may be something like how we're doing, in disarray. And yet they persist. They have stamina, the poet says, and somehow they manage to come together in their V formation and fly away. And this may be the most important lesson about perseverance. It's a lot better to be together than alone. We need one another. We need one another. I'm going to invite you to open the back of your hymnal to 468. This is just such a classic reading from George Odell. And I'm going to invite you to read the italic part as I read the other part.
What number?
468. 468. We need one another when we mourn and would be comforted.
We need one another when we are in trouble and afraid.
We need one another when we are in despair, in temptation, and need to be recalled to our best selves again.
We need one another when we would accomplish
We need one another in the hour of success when we look for someone to share our triumphs.
We need one another in the hour of defeat when we need encouragement,
we might endure and stand again. We need one another when we come to die and would have gentle hands prepare us for the journey. All our lives we are in need, and others are in need of us. Some of these instances that O'Dell talks about of needing one another speak more specifically to perseverance than others. We need one another when we would accomplish some great purpose. We need one another in the hour of defeat, when with encouragement, we might endure. Yet all of these things really speak of situations where we need perseverance and need one another in order to persevere. Michael Moore points out a lesson from high school band. He writes, "Sometimes in band or choir, music requires players or singers to hold a note longer than they can actually hold a note." Many of us here are choir people today. We know about this. In those cases, we were taught to mindfully stagger when we took a breath so the sound appeared uninterrupted. Everyone got to breathe, and the music stayed strong and vibrant. Let's remember music. Take a breath. The rest of the chorus will sing. The rest of the band will play. Rejoin so others can breathe. Together we can sustain a very long, beautiful song for a very, very long time. You don't have to do it all, but you must add your voice to the song. So this staggered breathing, as music directors call it, is also a reminder of how engaging in the work, whatever the work may be, together can make such a difference. When we work together, we can rest too. We can endure the marathon because sometimes we're not running. We're letting others carry us. And the same thing is true of the geese formation. That V requires hard work from the one out front, but less work from each of the other geese. They're relieved of the work, and they shift and share the responsibility of being the tip of the V. They're supported. This support from one another, this flying in the V formation, may be part of being close to what we love. Perseverance calls us to stay close to the people we love and who love us, who work with us and support and sustain us. You can work together and achieve so much more than you ever could alone, and that's such a significant piece of perseverance. There's more, though. Stay close to what you love. To persevere, you have to remember to nurture yourself with what you love, to admire the eclipse of the moon, to cut loose on the dance floor, to lose yourself in a novel or movie. If you're to persevere, your soul needs to be fed. In the Ritsona refugee camp in Greece, 700 people live on an old Air Force base, living in tents and shipping containers. They can't legally work until they're registered for asylum. They try to make the best of things. Children run and play, climbing trees and making up games with whatever they can find, even building tree forts out of the wood of old pallets and swings out of discarded life jackets. The lives are very rustic and basic. And yet the refugees worry about upgrades being made to the camp because it makes them think they will not get out of the camp for a very long time. Becca Stevens, an Episcopal priest, had founded the Magdalene Project more than 20 years ago in Nashville. It's a project that provides housing and services to help women leave prostitution and drug addiction. Job placement had proved a barrier, so they started their own economic enterprise, making and selling candles, what we now call social enterprise, combining entrepreneurship with helping people to change their lives. So Regina Mullins was one of the women who had helped through the Magdalene Project, and she became involved with Reverend Stephen's new adventure, which is helping these refugees in Greece. Regina described Ritsona refugee camp this way. Not only could you see the devastation, but you could feel it. It was thick in the air. Men and women who had lost everything. No way to take care of their families. They were all in this camp with these makeshift storage units that they were living in. They were at the mercy of the city to bring them food, water. When I walked into that camp, I saw what I felt all those years ago. Devastation. So Reverend Stevens wondered, why wouldn't something similar to what Regina had experienced work for the refugee women? Engagement in a task that created something of beauty and worth that could be sold. She was convinced that the world will look back on this time and regret our lack of welcome. And in thinking about that, a symbol occurred to her. What if they created welcome mats crafted out of the life vests that had protected them through their treacherous journeys across the Mediterranean? And so it came to be that Syrian and Kurdish women sat together around looms and wove welcome mats. They encountered resistance in the oddest places. The entities that were supposedly trying to help them stymied them with rules and regulations. In the meantime, they relived their multiple traumas. But they developed a mantra. Just keep weaving. And they did. They made enough money to sponsor a weekly bus to and from Athens, making medical care and engagement with normal life more accessible. They made money to send to their families, and they changed their lives. Regina Mullins puts it this way. Yes, it looks like I'm just making a mat, or I'm just making a candle, and I'm wasting my time. But in the creation of this, I am able to think something different, get out of a loop. And when I get out of that loop, I can make new connections. These refugee women have perseverance. The activity of weaving gives them meaning and focus while they wait for a new beginning, which may or may not come. Their activity gives them a chance to think new thoughts, thoughts of encouragement instead of despair. They create beauty and practical good, and as they do, they transform themselves. How do we engage in the world to persevere, to create both beauty and practical good, to transform ourselves and our world? How do we endure and stave off the spiritual exhaustion so prevalent in our times? I've offered a few guidelines. Be in it for the long run, the marathon rather than the sprint. Stay focused on the vision in the distance and on the work itself. Keep your eyes on the prize and your hand on the plow. Focus your mind with positive thoughts. Be with the people you love and help one another. Fly in the V formation rather than isolation so that you can spell one another and stagger your breathing. And in the midst of perseverance, feed your soul with beauty connection, nature, rest. Those are my suggestions. And I wonder if you have any. I'll open the floor now. Jean has a microphone.
John Lou, and to start with, you've made some very helpful, given me some very helpful ideas to deal with the crap and the chaos that are in so much of our society. And that needs a whole panoply of visions and strategies and so on. But sometimes, I mean, the little engine that could had the top of the hill, and the marathon has a finish line. But sometimes we're in situations that don't have a top of the hill to get over or a finish line. And I'm feeling this very acutely right now because my neighbor across the street killed himself. And this was you can see that somehow he needed perseverance in with an invalid, demanding, verbally abusive spouse. He needed some other strategy than you've mentioned here. And so I just encourage you to think about that and some other Sunday to talk with us about how to deal with situations that do not have a top of the hill or the finish line. I have another friend who's in a related situation like that. And it just feels so strange because I'm in such an opposite situation with, you know, the only stresses I have are those stresses that I choose to see from reading the newspaper. I need to help friends, and I need to have better ways.
I think one of the points that you're really kind of making there is that sometimes perseverance isn't what we need. Sometimes what we need is to say, what do I do differently? How do I change what I'm doing?
Yeah. But you sometimes have constraints on that.
Mm-hmm.
Ethical constraints.
Yeah.
Anyway, you think about it.
Yeah.
In the past year, I've started keeping a gratitude journal because if I remind myself at least once a day of the things in my life that I am grateful for and think positively, that helps me persevere with things that are not as positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen people use gratitude journals to work their way out of depression even. It's, yeah, great tool.
I know this past year I've been kind of dealt a hurdle with no potential ending, and I've noticed that as much as I wanted to close myself off, the harder it got, the more vulnerable and open I became. It opened the door for vulnerability in that situation, and we're seeing the end of the hill now, and it's, I know that's super counterintuitive when you're, you know, confronted with all of these things, but I made a point every day to be vulnerable and to be open and have those courageous conversations, and it's really, really paying off in this situation. So,
thank you, JC.
One thing I've noticed, we've been talking a lot about mental things, and I think there's another side to it, and that's physical. So things like getting exercise during the winter, getting vitamin D, that is going to be another way to just increase your fortitude.
Thanks, yeah. We live in bodies. All right. Oh, Betty.
One of the things that I think that's very distracting to persistence is the state that we have arrived at where everything is presented as an urgent need. And I think that it's really important to stop and say, where does this fit within my picture, my values, my vision? You know, we're just beaten down daily with got to do this, got to do that, and we need to put that away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks. Not everything's urgent.
I'm Ricardo, and I'm new here. And thinking about what you just said, about a year and a half ago, I started exploring what it would be like to start saying no to what other people were asking me to do, really straightforward, or no to what I thought they were expecting me to do. And over time, I realized that actually I was not really saying the word no. It was really just declining or making decisions that what was important to me, like you said. But after a while, I realized it was saying yes. Mm-hmm. I kept having to reflect and decide, what is it I want? What, this is my world that I live too. So over time, it got easier, but even a year and a half later, I was still finding myself just gravitating to saying yes to others. So just to respond to what you said, I think that reflection, not overthinking, but taking time to reflect on the world that you live and the decisions that you can make, and if that's not what other people want for you, that's the way it is. You can become happy because you're making the right decisions for you.
All right, words of Nelson Mandela. I've walked that long way to freedom. I've tried not to falter. I've made missteps along the way. But I've discovered the secret that after climbing a great hill, one only finds that there are many more hills to climb. I've taken a moment here to rest, to steal a view of the glorious vista that surrounds me, to look back on the distance I have come. But I can only rest for a moment, for with freedom come responsibilities, and I dare not linger, for my long walk is not ended. Our hymn is number 118, and I bet you know this hymn. You don't necessarily need to look at the book. Right? Anyway, let's try it.
Let it shine.
So may you stay in the race, encouraged by your own mind and by those around you. May you fly like the geese, supported by the wings to your right and left. May you weave the life jacket that kept you alive into the beauty of a welcome mat. And may you persevere in whatever you put your mind to. And I'm going to ask conveners who are interested to come here at 12 o'clock, and we'll talk about whether we're going to meet today.